podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast, and thanks for listening and downloading to the Glenn McGraw podcast. And yeah, I don't know really how we managed to get him as a guest. He's an absolute legend, isn't he? He was brilliant. Well done, producer Chuck, for that. Chris, great chat to the great man, wasn't it? The great Glenn McGraw.
It was. He was fantastic, wasn't he? We've obviously had some very intense rivalries on and off the field with him over the years with the Barmy Army, but he's a smashing bloke, and I think anyone you speak to, everyone in the Barmy Army loves him. I loved to hate him back in the day, but loves him now for all the work he's done for the McGraw Foundation, but just for the wider game of cricket as well, and how you can make such a powerful day something to do with Test cricket, the beautiful game. So it was a pleasure to speak to him, and great to see that he's taken it from strength to strength, and also he's been great to listen to, hasn't he, on BT as well?
He always is. He knows a lot about the game, doesn't he? He's a bit of an Aussie goat, really, isn't he, in terms of fast bowling. But we did speak to him ahead of that Sydney Test match, which obviously was the pink test and had the Jay McGraw day where all the players donned pink. It looked fantastic, as always. Of course it did, and loads of money raised. Got to say, there was in the Bashers, which is the sort of mini thing that we do between the Barmy Army and also the what's the Aussie fan group called?
The Richies.
Yeah. And they have like a series, don't they? A series of matches.
Five T20s across each state.
And it's mega, isn't it? Like loads of people turn out. It's like a really big event. I've never actually been to one because I've never been to Australia for the Ashes, but I always look in envy on the social channels, and it looks brilliant. It looks so good. But that's raised $11,000 for the Ruth Strauss Foundation and the McGraw Foundation. Fantastic. And also that pink test did raise a record $5 million Aussie dollars.
So, wow.
So when Glenn was on about that to us, saying, oh, we're setting a target for this, wow, can't knock that. And thanks to everybody who bought those virtual seats as well, because that was a really clever little initiative. And yeah, it was brilliant. Really, really good. So that, well done to everybody concerned in that. And also well done to everybody concerned who represented the Barmy Army in the Bashers, Chris.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got something to cheer, Greggy, haven't we? We've got a 3-2 win overseas in Australia. Not many times you can say that, but we've managed to retain the Bashers, which is wonderful news for every English Barmy out there listening to this podcast.
It was a good week anyway for the England lads, because they needed to bounce back. And all right, it wasn't a win, but it was like proper Test cricket. Johnny with that amazing 100 as well, like celebrating like mad, copping a load of abuse off the Aussie supporters as well, as he was walking off at lunch at 74 for 4 with Stokesy. Great 100, great save Test match. I mean, those scenes, I know it was like heart and mouth type thing, wasn't it? Towards the end of the Test match on that final day, those final overs. But gotta love it when you've got just 11 men round the bat and you've got Jimmy Anderson there just trying to nerdle it out. And I love that. Absolutely love that. Was there a quote from that other podcast, that other small time cricket podcast, Tail Enders, where Jimmy said that Brodie was trying to give him a little bit of stick? And saying, oh yeah, well,
he
just
no, he's giving him advice, wasn't he?
Yeah, advice. He said, I don't really need this, mate. I've done this before. So I love that. It was great to watch, really good to watch. And actually, I just think 3-1 would be, you know, it's obviously not what we went out there for, but it'd restore a lot of pride, which Joe did speak about after that third test. So
yeah, I think they've also, that test has probably given them imagine how low the confidence was, just being rolled by Australia, on the bounce. And then to go out there and to show, bloody hell, yeah, we can stand up to these and we can show a bit of fight. Obviously, Johnny's runs were incredibly important, but I hope that gives the rest of the batting group confidence to go on and
and do something special in Hobart. It's a day-nighter. We've never played there before. There's no Ashes test ever there before. It's an unknown. Let's see what it's like. I tell you what, it's going to be a damn sight better than Perth. That's all I know for our chances in getting the result.
Yeah, and it looks a smashing ground, actually, that Hobart, doesn't it? Looks really good. And also, just for the viewers and listeners of the Ashes, 4 a.m. start Friday morning is when it's... I've just learned that, to be fair. Cheers, Chuck, for telling me. But yeah, that is when it starts. BT coverage. And talking of the BT coverage, that is our guest today. Not all of the BT lot, because that would be quite the scoop, wouldn't it? But yeah, we've managed to get Matt Smith, who's been anchoring the coverage all the way through the night, all the way through this test series. He's a smashing guy, smashing presenter. Chris, you met him out in Australia last time around 4 or 5 years ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
And he's a really, really good guy. And by his own admission, you know, he admits it in the podcast with us, cricket's not his number one sport. Of course it's not. You know, this guy's a professional sports presenter, but he does a smashing job, doesn't he? And we also ask him a little bit about Cookie and Moeen, which has been a topic of conversation amongst the cricketing fraternity on social media.
For the conversation length, which is a fairly short pod for our standard podcast, but we covered a lot, didn't we? We covered the football coverage, we covered the cricket coverage, we covered how to cover cricket coverage. We even covered a massive supermarket chain, which I'm sure you'll hear about in a moment.
That is right. Also, one of the downsides to the final test match is that Joss Butler has flown home. He's broken his finger. If you saw any of the coverage, you would have seen him playing the replay after replay of that. And I was wincing every single time I saw that.
Do you want to know something funny about that? I got a text off my mate who was... For the listeners, I keep wicket very badly for my Saturday team. The first team captain of the club was actually out at the time. I think he was watching the game. He was fairly drunk, but I think he'd been out and got back and decided to watch the game. I got three texts off him, one saying, "Hey, lad, hope you're well, mate. Just want to let you know, saw Joss Butler get hit on the hand. Thought of you. How's the hand?" So I think a wicket-keeping injury has gone through his drunken state at 3 o'clock in the morning. Thought, I better text my lad to see if hand's all right.
Class. Love that. Well, there you go. It's sad that he's flying home early. Maybe he's flying back to don some Charles Tyrwhitt clobber. That was a very poor segue. In fact, everybody on the Zoom call all put their heads in their hands. Charles Tyrwhitt, you may remember, if you're an avid listener of this podcast, it is the clothing company that I said that I should definitely be tabbing up because they make men look really, really good with their cool clothing.
Can't make you any taller, though.
And Thanks, mate. Wow. Thanks very much. Look, I'm just saying, if it's good enough for Joss, it's good enough for us.
Absolutely.
You know, he's a very smart looking man. Go on their Instagram, Charles Tyrwhitt. It's also, I don't think I made it clear enough last time, spelling it is Tyrwhitt, Charles Tyrwhitt. There we go. And it's got a Butte collection of all the menswear on sale now, by the way. Boxing Day sales, if you like, 16th of January, extra 10% off with the sale code BARMY10. So there you go. There you have it. Beautifully done. Right, enough from us. We'll be back with another podcast before the end of this Ashes series. It's obviously catching up with me. And before we're going to get a proper broadcaster in now, it's Matt Smith here on the Shackles Are Up podcast. We were just talking off air just a minute ago, weren't we, about your sleep pattern. So were you meant to be out in Australia, or, you know, COVID permitting, basically, and then basically now you've been stuck in a studio in London and now up through the night and you don't know what on earth's going on? Do you have any tips for that? Because there's lots of viewers who've probably been trying it with beer and cake and all that, and they've fallen foul, basically.
Yeah, I don't think there's a kind of hard and fast successful formula that I've found anyway. I think everybody gets lulled into... I've done night shifts before many years ago, and everyone gets lulled into the idea that if you eat a lot of rubbish, that'll give you the energy to see you through. And of course, it doesn't really work, but it doesn't stop you from trying really hard. So you end up putting on quite a lot of weight and feeling fairly bad about yourself, which isn't a great help when you're trying to cheer up the nation, the cricket-loving nation, sitting through what's been a tough few weeks. But yeah, actually, the truth is, obviously, you know, you're supposed to look after yourself, but, you know, none of us actually do that. So, yeah. And of course, having cricketers alongside me doesn't help. They are terrible sweet eaters. Horrendous sweet. Honestly, I've rarely seen less athletic individuals.
Have you managed to sneak in any shut-eye on the sofa in the green room, or is it thoroughly professional on the job?
No, well, we haven't, because the nature of, obviously, as you guys know, the nature of having the coast commentary for the first two tests meant that we were on our tiptoes all the time, because you're working around the feed that they give you, which isn't perfect. There's issues with ad breaks, issues with sometimes cutting away to things that we can't see but can hear, all sorts of technical hassle that I won't bore you with here. But so you can't leave it alone for a second. Obviously, we've had weather issues, as we did 4 years ago when I was out there. We had rain every test 4 years ago, bizarrely, in an Aussie summer in Perth. And we've had a bit similar here, haven't we? We've had kind of, you know, even if it's only been slight, but there's been issues around each test match with the weather. So you can't leave it alone. That said, my most regular guest is prone to a relaxed few minutes. Sir Alistair is there's no greater catnapper that I've met than Sir Alistair. But he seems to be asleep and yet still seems to be able to sit up and talk about what's just happened. So it's a hell of a skill.
He's a cruisy bloke, isn't he? I mean, how much have you enjoyed their company? Because the coverage has been great. We're not just saying that, actually. Considering the challenges you've faced, where you've just basically just had to take the feed for the first couple of tests, like you say, and it was, you know, a little bit sort of Bob Todd, wasn't it, in the first, you know, that's no fault of BT's, by the way. It was a lot of it. I mean, in that first test match, Chris, we were having that overnight party, and there was the one camera feed.
Yeah.
And that seems a distant lifetime ago now, but it was down at final leg.
that was our only camera that we actually had or were allowed, really. That was supposed to be for the hits with, you know, Glenn McGrath or Mel Farrell or whatever, and that was the only camera that had a feed out of the ground, because they lost all power, Fox, which they had, in fairness, they'd raised with Cricket Australia. I think there's a particular issue at the Gabba. It doesn't run, the whole coverage doesn't run on mains power, it only runs on a generator, because I think they're doing major reconstruction of the stadium for the Commonwealth Games in 11 years or whenever it is. And until then, they can't have mains power servicing the actual coverage, which is, you know, a bit weird. But when the generator went down, that was it. For half an hour, the world just lost the Ashes, which was pretty crap. We had this one camera, which was really weird, really weird. And we were sat there, we were trying to commentate, which is, you know, not great from 9,000 miles away. So, no, the lads have been great, to be honest. Obviously, I come periodically to cricket as a bit of an interloper. I wouldn't try and hide that fact. It's not something I, you know, I'm able to cover week in, week out. So I'm always slightly playing catch up as much as I try to keep abreast of it all. It's not, you know, if you're not working on it every week, you don't have that residual kind of reservoir of detailed knowledge. So I'm leaning on the cricketers very much for insight and detail. And, of course, that's what they do. But they're also, some of them at least, not kind of veteran broadcasters. So we're all a little bit, you know, feeling our way. But in that regard, there's pros and cons, I think, to that, because the conversation can be quite fresh. Can be, you know, we're not all stuck in our little kind of routines or ruts that you probably get into if you cover a sport all the time. And that's no slight on other broadcasters, or indeed our own coverage of sports that we cover week in, week out, like football. But it's a challenge, but I think one we've tried to bring some humour and some lightheartedness and obviously some insight to as much as you can from such a long way away. It's helped definitely that we've had now our own people like Lord Gower and Mel and Glenn when possible, with COVID situations permitting. When we've had them on the ground, it gives you eyes and ears close to the action, which definitely helps.
Yeah, it's been really good. Honestly, it's not shown with all the challenges and stuff. It's been really good, and hopefully the viewers have been patient with you. Talking of viewers, you have the super fans. We've had several members of the Barmy Army actually being, and that adds a different dimension, doesn't it, to the coverage. And I've really quite enjoyed that. We've had Adam from the Barmy Army. We've had our producer Chuck as well, who's featured. It is. He's giving us a wave on the Zoom call. Look, yeah. Turn that camera back off. You've had enough air time.
Now famous.
But that's added a different dimension to it, and I suppose that's, you can actually tell that the lads you've had on the sofa, like Cookie and Harmy and Moeen as well, they've actually quite enjoyed that interaction, because they might not necessarily get that instant kind of feedback off supporters during a test match ordinarily. So that's been a different dimension, hasn't it?
Definitely. I think they enjoy the fact they don't have to speak for a couple of minutes and leave me doing all the work. But no, it's been good. I think it was producer Lucy's idea to kind of try and create a kind of instant goggle box was the kind of idea behind it. And obviously, because we are not in Australia, and obviously all the viewers, including obviously a chunk of the Barmy Army itself, couldn't make the trip, the idea was to try and get that instant feedback from the sofas of the UK. So I think in that regard, it's been good. I mean, obviously, when the results are as bad as they've been, it could become a bit of a misery fest, you know, asking poor people who are trying to stay awake, often on their own at 3 or 4 in the morning, what they've made of another disastrous session can become a little bit, like kind of students navel gazing and getting ever more about the lack of money for beer. But no, I think it's given a bit of added value. It gives us just a quick sense of where the cricket watching public are at, and that I think that's valuable. You know, I think we all now live in an era where we're used to instant reaction, aren't we, all the time with social media or however the TV companies work and so on. So it's in our kind of appetite now to want to know what other people think straight away and have a bit of a sounding board, and it's been good like that. And I think the folks that have come on have been really game, considering, as I say, they're up in the middle of the night.
It's been a tough grind for some of them, hasn't it, on some of the days. But I think Chuck fell quite lucky with the test that he got. But
he did
indeed. Matt, just on the I know we spoke a long time ago when you were last on the Ashes tour in Australia, and you were quite honest, and you were loved cricket and you were a fan of it, but you were fairly new to it in the capacity you were in. How have you found it in comparison to football? Have you enjoyed it? Is it more fun to commentate on? Is it more fun to present on? Or is it a lot different? What are the challenges in cricket that you might not get in football?
It is different, for sure, yeah. It obviously, it's a game of massive amount of statistics and information. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to get your head around. And as I say, you know, I'm perfectly honest enough to say that it's not something I can do all the time, because obviously the rights don't allow me to do that kind of for the rest of the year. So to you kind of jump in and jump out, and that has its challenges for sure. And I think any broadcaster would admit that. So a lot of information, long format, obviously, in terms of test cricket, doing a T20 or even an ODI, as we have done, is, dare I say, more straightforward, because the cricket is crash bang wallop, generally speaking, certainly in T20, and the story can be told in a relatively short time. Whereas tests, obviously, particularly one where you're thousands of miles away, there's a lot of space to fill and have a conversation around. And that you're only as good then as your guests, really, you know, and the guests have been really good. And we've tried to obviously rotate them to give fresh voices and fresh approaches. And I think that's worked. I think we've tried to balance, obviously, bowlers and batters. We've had Matt Prior as wicketkeeper as well. We've got Mark Butcher coming in for the fifth test. We've tried very much, and now we've got our own commentators as well. I think I'd like to think that the voices, the kind of plethora of voices, have created, you know, the conversation that people have got used to around their coverage of cricket. So, yeah, it's never easy jumping in. It's never easy being a long way from the game. But compared to football, yeah, obviously football, for instance, you can have up to an hour's build-up, and we do that with the cricket. So I'm used to that. I'm used to a pre-match conversation. Obviously, half-time in a football match is a very quick summing up of what's happened, particularly on a commercial channel with ads. And then at the end, you'll, even for a final of a big competition, you might get an hour. So, but at the end of a test, like obviously on Sunday morning, where it's gone to the wire, we do as long as we can, really, you know, and suck up all the reaction and the chat and the kind of sense of, oh my God, what's just happened, you know. You drain it for everything that it's worth, really. So it's hard work. I'd be the first to say it's hard work. I'm knackered at the end, and obviously that's part of the time of day. But there's a lot to get my head round, and I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed being, you know, challenged and put on my toes. The only thing is, you feel like you're getting the hang of it, and we're up to the last Test match. But we've got the West Indies as well, so we've got plenty to look forward to.
Well, that's good. You know what? That's really good. One thing that I really dying to ask, right? And there'll be a lot of people who are listening to this podcast. You know what I'm going to ask, Matt. And I love it. And I love the fact that you're preempting this question, right? So we're watching, if you've not seen any of the coverage or you weren't watching at these particular moments, you might be unawares of this. So Sir Alistair Cook, we love him. We've had him on the podcast. Yeah. And he's a great of the game. Moeen Ali, massive, massive favourite of the Barmy Army. We absolutely love Moeen Ali. Those two on the sofa together, they had a bit of beef, like a little bit of sort of, they were like locking horns, but not just like once, like a few times. And then, you know, you actually, to be fair, because they were trying to sort of get out of it and back to you, and you were going, hang on, what's that? And you kind of brought it back. And I love that, because not many presenters would have done that. But it was like totally bizarre. So a lot of people watching and listening to this podcast will want to know, was that legitimate? And then the second follow-up question to that, I suppose, is what was it like when you then cut back to the action? Were they having fisticuffs? Were you in the middle as like some kind of mediator? What was going on? I can't imagine that actually being true, but
no.
Yeah, come on, fill us in.
Okay, so the truth is that they get on like a house on fire. They are really, really good mates. And I don't think it probably comes as a shock to people who know their cricket. So it's been a very much a false war. That said, I think they both tried to be honest. I think Mo, when he said, look, you know, Joe's a more arm around the shoulder captain, but I never got dropped by Cookie. So I think he was just trying to be honest. And then Cookie was like slightly, I think, very much tongue in cheek, but slightly like, oh, so I'm not empathetic. And so it kind of became this kind of phony war, but it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable because I think teammates often, understandably, but totally reluctant to ever say anything remotely insightful or honest about each other. You know, it's all platitudes and easy right bloke. And of course, these two are genuinely, I wouldn't say otherwise, they genuinely are mates. But it was great. It was refreshing, I think, that they were prepared to slightly take a chip out of each other and be honest about each other. So I think they were amused that it had been turned into, I think partly because no one else had much to talk about because the cricket was so rubbish. That it became a story, you know, that the newspapers were picking up this idea of a feud in the studio. So they were dreaming up new ways to kind of take chunks out of each other in the next session or the next show, or the next day or whatever. But hand on heart, they are good buddies. They really are. But it was all the more fun to see them have a little nibble at each other.
Oh, and, I was
dead keen to join in and
yeah,
foment it.
At those BT studios, you've got all the boxing rings and all that kind of stuff. I wondered if you were going to wheel one of those in at some stage.
Well,
you know?
Cookie was talking about going into Westfield, which is the big shopping centre next to BT, and finding some boxing gloves. unfortunately, we couldn't get our hands on a pair in time, but that was the next thought.
It was great. It was brilliant to watch that. You know, purely from a presenting perspective as well, you must go, hello. Brilliant, rubbing your hands together a little bit when you've got two greats of the game, pundits, kind of going after each other a little bit. It's not really what you expect, particularly in cricket. You might expect it if you're doing, you know, when you're doing the National League coverage, for example, Matt, right? Yeah. You might expect two people who've got a bit of beef with each other, in, you know, from one team or another, you know, you stick them together and, we didn't know that you two didn't like each other. But that's not what you expect, is it?
Well, no, although it obviously does, I think the touring part of cricket, obviously it's been talked about a lot more in recent years, hasn't it? How it can send some of them, you know, slightly doolally. And I get it. I think the time away from home, the length of a tour, the bubble, I think life, which I think is far harder than most people will probably appreciate. Although we've all obviously had our hardships in the last 18 months, 2 years. I do understand that. Sometimes it can appear like sports people are mollycoddled and only moan about their privileged lives. And I'm sure they wouldn't want that to be the image. But I think it's been tough. So I think it's understandable if teammates don't always want to share the same space 24 hours a day. I think any people would probably need a bit of sense of space, and they don't always get it, you know? So it's hard to expect a squad of, with support staff, maybe 40, 50 plus people to all be, you know, cheek by jowl and all be super close. I think one of the things around the whole kind of cricket in the gutter conversation the last few months has been the nature of cricketers obviously to seek out people who are a bit like them for the, and then is that natural? Is that acceptable? Is that cliquey? Does that cause division and unrest in dressing rooms? It's a natural and important conversation to have. But I think we've got to be honest to say that is to some extent that is human nature. For instance, Moeen was very quick to say him and Rash are very, very close. And it could be seen as a clique that they hang around together so much, but they don't see it that way. And I don't think it should be seen that way, but it is part of the dressing room culture that you find people who are like you. And those are the people you spend the most time with.
It is. It's an interesting debate. Who's your like for like then? Who's your clique at BT?
Well, I don't know if I really have one. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, we have the little National League crew and I get on well with them because we're left out of the spotlight a little bit. We can crack on with our own little crew and that, I quite like that. Amongst the ones that I work with on Champions League and the rest of it, I obviously get on very well with Steve McManaman because he's from my part of the world and we kind of see eye to eye on a few things. But they're all good people. And I've often been asked, like, are there not some that you've found a pain in the bum? And I haven't really, to be honest. I've had one or two where I thought, before I've worked with them, this could be tricky. Like Gordon Strachan, for instance, who actually turns out to be a great bloke. As a manager, he was quite hard to deal with, and he'd be the first to admit that. So when he came to work with me at ITV, I was a bit, God, this could be tricky. But actually, he was great. And obviously, Roy Keane is also someone that is slow to accept that you're not out to tuck him up. You know? But once he does accept that, he's good as gold. So, yeah, I can't honestly say he or she, you know, are difficult to work with. They're not really. It's like most lines of work, you know, you get to know people. They turn out to be pretty nice people.
This is good to know.
Great to hear. Matt, we just, we were speaking about it off air a little bit earlier, but you've had quite an interesting 18 months prior to getting back on the wagon with the Ashes. Can you tell everyone a little bit about your experience in a different field, please?
Well, yeah. So I think like a lot of people, I was suddenly stuck. Where are we now? Not far off 2 years ago. So when it all came to a grinding halt in March of 2020, for a month or two, there was obviously no programmes to make. There was no games to go to. There was no work to be had. So I didn't know quite what to do with myself, really. I did a bit of DIY and that kind of stuff and got in the way at home. And in a conversation with my wife, I thought, well, should I like try and find something useful to do? And in a kind of slight fit of curiosity, applied to become a delivery driver for a couple of supermarkets. And Tesco gave me the opportunity. Said, go on, we'll come and train you. I think they were a bit shocked when I turned up. And like, oh, okay. But then everyone accepted that was, why shouldn't you? And yeah, I've been doing it ever since. I can't do it very often, obviously, now that normal life has resumed. But my boss, as he is at Tesco, who's a great bloke, is very flexible. And I still enjoy it. So I was out last night, actually. Got home from the cricket on, actually, the Italian football. It was a bit of a mad weekend. And then came home late Sunday night. And then last night, I was out in my wagon around Congleton and Macclesfield, dropping off people shopping, which I do enjoy. I must say, I do enjoy. It's a slice of real life, and that's good for us all.
That's great.
That's outstanding.
Love that. And you've got no intention, by the sounds of it, of kind of stopping. I know, obviously, like you said, schedule doesn't allow you to do it all the time, but you want to keep doing that, don't you?
I enjoy it, yeah. If I can do it and they're willing to be flexible around the day job, as it were, then all to the good. So, yeah, I wouldn't want to give it up unless circumstances prevented me from doing it. It's not going to make me rich, but that's not why I do it, you know? I do it to basically get a bit of a window on the world around me, and that's hopefully a good thing.
Well, we'll just hope that your boss is listening. You know, your Tesco boss, not the BT boss, obviously, just the Tesco boss.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, it's been really good to talk to you. I could have talked to you forever.
Thanks, guys. About all sorts of stuff.
And good luck with that last test as well, because you'll near that end. And also the West Indies. So
are you going out, Matt, to the West Indies? Are you going to be
still up in the air? I think obviously with COVID and the logistics that go with that, it looks more and more difficult to get out there and produce the output from the Caribbean, which is obviously a gutter for me. But it's the next best thing is to sit and watch with, as I've said, folks that are becoming friends, and hopefully see some England wins. That would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully we'll see you out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much, Matt. Top man. And
take boys. Nice to chat.
Thanks for coming on, Matt. You as well. Man.
Podcast Network.